Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today on the program, we're going to get a little update on the new monastery for the Adoration Sisters being constructed. Talk about the power of prayer, really, which has been going on in this diocese since the very beginning of it. So I hope you will stick around for our interview with Brian Cooper and Katie Fritz from the Catholic Community Foundation. Gene Young will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings for this Palm Sunday. Donna Cannon with the first and second reading, and Monsignor Charles Mangan with the Gospel.
A reading from the book of the prophet Isaiah. The Lord God has given me a well-trained tongue, that I might know how to speak to the weary a word that will rouse them. Morning after morning he opens my ear that I may hear, and I have not rebelled, have not turned back. I gave my back to those who beat me, my cheeks to those who plucked my beard. My face I did not shield from buffets and spitting. The Lord God is my help, therefore I am not disgraced. I have set my face like flint, knowing that I shall not be put to shame. The word of the Lord. A reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Philippians. Christ Jesus, though he was in the form of God, did not regard equality with God something to be grasped. Rather, he emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, coming in human likeness, and found human in appearance, he humbled himself, becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Because of this, God greatly exalted him and bestowed on him the name which is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bend, of those in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. The word of the Lord.
The Passion of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Matthew. Jesus stood before the governor, Pontius Pilate, who questioned him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus said, "You say so." And when he was accused by the chief priests and elders, he made no answer. Then Pilate said to him, "Do you not hear how many things they are testifying against you?" But he did not answer him one word, so that the governor was greatly amazed. Now on the occasion of the feast, the governor was accustomed to release to the crowd one prisoner whom they wished. And at that time they had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when they had assembled, Pilate said to them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, called the Christ?" For he knew that it was out of envy that they had handed him over. While he was still seated on the bench, his wife sent him a message, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man. I suffered much in a dream today because of him." The chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowds to ask for Barabbas, but to destroy Jesus. The governor said to them in reply, "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" They answered, "Barabbas." Pilate said to them, "Then what shall I do with Jesus, called Christ?" They all said, "Let him be crucified." But he said, "Why? What evil has he done?" They only shouted the louder, "Let him be crucified." When Pilate saw that he was not succeeding at all, but that a riot was breaking out instead, he took water and washed his hands in the sight of the crowd, saying, "I am innocent of this man's blood. Look to it yourselves." And the whole people said in reply, "His blood be upon us and upon our children." Then he released Barabbas to them, but after he had Jesus scourged, he handed him over to be crucified. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus inside the praetorium and gathered the whole cohort around him. They stripped off his clothes and threw a scarlet military cloak about him. Weaving a crown out of thorns, they placed it on his head and a reed in his right hand. And kneeling before him, they mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews!" They spat upon him and took the reed and kept striking him on the head. And when they had mocked him, they stripped him of the cloak, dressed him in his own clothes, and led him off to crucify him. As they were going out, they met a Cyrenian named Simon. This man they pressed into service to carry his cross. And when they came to a place called Golgotha, which means place of the skull, they gave Jesus wine to drink mixed with gall. But when he had tasted it, he refused to drink. After they had him crucified, they divided his garments by casting lots. Then they sat down and kept watch over him there. And they placed over his head the written charge against him, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two revolutionaries were crucified with him, one on his right and the other on his left. Those passing by reviled him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who would destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself if you are the Son of God, and come down from the cross." Likewise, the chief priests with the scribes and elders mocked him and said, "He saved others, he cannot save himself. So he is the King of Israel. Let him come down from the cross now, and we will believe in him. He trusted in God. Let him deliver him now if he wants him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" The revolutionaries who were crucified with him also kept abusing him in the same way. From noon onward, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And about 3 o'clock, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Some of the bystanders who heard it said, "This one is calling for Elijah." Immediately, one of them ran to get a sponge. He soaked it in wine and, putting it on a reed, gave it to him to drink. But the rest said, "Wait, let us see if Elijah comes to save him." But Jesus cried out again in a loud voice and gave up his spirit. And behold, the veil of the sanctuary was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth quaked, rocks were split, tombs were opened, and the bodies of many saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming forth from their tombs after his resurrection, they entered the holy city and appeared to many. The centurion and the men with him who were keeping watch over Jesus feared greatly when they saw the earthquake and all that was happening, and they said, "Truly, this was the Son of God." The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Gene Young.
Thanks, Jerry. In the news this morning, the Gift of Hope concerts benefiting the Catholic Family Services Gift of Hope Fund recently drew more than 1,500 people this year. The fund supports CFS efforts to help individuals to receive services such as adoption services, grief support, and other counseling services. This year, a second show was added after the first sold out. The concert featured contemporary Christian musical artist Mark Schultz. Schultz himself is adopted and wrote a beautiful song to his birth mother entitled "Everything to Me." Schultz incorporated a children's choir as part of his performance. You can read and see more about the Gift of Hope concerts in the April edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in homes across the diocese right now and online at www.sfcatholic.org. In other news, Pope Francis strongly condemned a shocking chemical attack in Syria that left some 70 people, including at least 10 children, dead. "We are horrified by the latest events in Syria. I strongly deplore the unacceptable massacre that took place yesterday in the Idlib province, where dozens of civilians, including many children, were killed," the Pope said this week before concluding his weekly general audience in St. Peter's Square. Images of dead men, women, and children lying on the streets provoked international outrage following the attack in a rebel-held area. Western leaders have accused Syrian President Bashar al-Assad and the country's military of perpetrating the attack based on reports that warplanes dropped chemical bombs in the early morning. According to the New York Times, the Syrian military denied attacking the town and said the attack was caused by insurgents who blame the Syrian government for similar attacks every time they fail to achieve the goals of their sponsors. Decrying the evil of human trafficking as an international, national, and local scourge, three Catholic bishops whose dioceses cover portions of Maryland said their state is not immune from this tragic reality. "Our state is a prime location for local, national, and international trafficking due to the Interstate 95 corridor that connects multiple major cities in the region, the number of truck and rest stops along highways, and the ease of travel that the Baltimore-Washington International Thurgood Marshall Airport," they said in a statement this week. "As people of faith, this grave injustice cries out for a response," they said. With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom.
A little short on the newscast this morning, Gene, but it's Palm Sunday, so those readings are lengthy, but appreciate the news. Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Katie Fritz and Brian Cooper from the Catholic Community Foundation for Eastern South Dakota. We're going to talk about a number of things, but primarily we're going to talk about the new monastery for the Adoration Sisters. It is becoming a reality, and it's really fun, isn't it, Katie?
Yes, it is. It's so exciting that Earth is moving outside. It's wonderful to see.
Yeah. This has been a long journey.
It has, and I started with this journey just about 6 months ago, so before my time. Funds were trying to be raised for this monastery, and it's now coming to fruition.
Yeah, and in the long view, this is a story 15 years in the making.
That's
Brian,
right.
As a former journalist, that's a long story.
It's a long story and a long journey. But you know what? The best part is it's going to be worth it when it's all finished. The sisters came here 15 years ago because Archbishop Carlson asked them to pray for the diocese and pray for the priests and pray for all of us. And I think it's only now that people are really understanding the power that these women have in their prayer and how they help everybody in the diocese. And the fact that we get to be a very, very small part of helping this home of intercessory prayer become a reality. And you see the dirt moving out there, like Katie said, it's amazing.
You know, this diocese has been the beneficiary of women religious almost since the very beginning, and in fact, before it actually was a diocese. And so we know the power that religious women have had in our diocese and continue to have. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't have a lot of the things we have today that people take for granted. Right. Vera Health.
Yeah.
Places like that were started by sisters. Because there was a need.
Yeah.
In Aberdeen and Yankton and Sioux Falls, we wouldn't have these type of things in the way we do today if we didn't, like you said, have these really just great religious women who have been here before the diocese even started.
Mm-hmm. Right. Catholic schools is another great example of Catholic women, these Catholic women helping us all in education. I'm excited. The biggest thing I'm excited for these sisters of the Blessed Sacrament is that they are going to get to grow their order, and they're going to be able to let more people know about them, because they will be so much more visible in our diocese. So that's pretty exciting.
And the best part about the project is that the monastery will have a chapel where 24 hours a day there will be Eucharistic adoration. Yeah. So, you know, how many of us out there have woken up at 2 a.m. and just needed to pray? Well, now you're going to have a place in Sioux Falls on the campus of the Cathedral of St. Joseph, the Beacon of Hope, where you're going to be able to go in and pray at any time, and one of these sisters will be praying with you.
Mm-hmm. I love how the Lord uses all these things in our lives and has, again, throughout the history of our diocese, as we talked about, maybe in healthcare and in education and in parish ministry and all the different ways that religious women have been involved. And certainly all the way through, women religious have been praying for us. We know that. But in this new way now, that here we are at this moment, and again, we have a chance as lay people to participate in that.
Right.
How cool is that?
It is. It's incredible. And, you know, the whole theme of all of this has been the power of prayer. And just even saying the power of prayer, it resonates with you, and it's resonating with so many more people in our diocese. To see what they do day in and day out is truly incredible, and it causes you to pause and just, you know, step back and say, wow, they have devoted their entire life to prayer. They're praying for me. Mm-hmm. I hardly even know them, and yet they are praying for me, who of us doesn't need prayer? I mean, all of us need them so much in our world today.
Yeah, absolutely true.
And the best part about it is they can pray for you specifically as well, and you can do that by going to their website, PerpetualAdorationSisters.org. There you can learn more about the sisters, see videos of the people's lives they're touching individually. But the best part is you can actually go on there and click request a prayer, and you can put a specific prayer request in there, either for you or for somebody else. And those sisters will get that email, and they take it down in front of the Blessed Sacrament and pray for it individually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how powerful is that? to people who need it.
So that's a nice way to understand what technology, in a sense, has done for us. Different than maybe years ago when you know, you needed to write a letter or you needed to do some other way to let people know you needed prayer. It's this fast.
It's instant. It's,
you know, snap your fingers and it's there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. How many times in our life do we have something come up with us, a family member, a friend, and we're all carrying around a smartphone in our pocket? Well, now there's an actual concrete way, other than us saying a prayer, to say, okay, I'm going to go online and request this prayer for my friend, my family, and that prayer is getting put in front of the Blessed Sacrament. And there's no more powerful prayer than that.
Yeah, absolutely so. Well, we're talking about this today because, as Katie mentioned at the beginning, there's dirt moving.
Oh, yes.
And it's very exciting. And we're going to formalize that, in a sense, with a groundbreaking, even though the ground is already broken. But I don't think we ought to let that limit us. But a special event coming up, Katie.
Yes. So on Friday, April 21st, we are going to bless the construction site and turn the dirt. To make it truly official, Bishop Swain will be with us that afternoon, and we'll have a small program, and all the sisters, all 11 of them, will be out there with the biggest smiles on their faces. You won't believe. They are so excited. But to make this truly official, we're going to begin with adoration. We're going to begin
Seems fitting.
Them in the cathedral at 11 a.m. on the 21st, Friday the 21st, for an hour of Eucharistic adoration. Then there will be the regular noon Mass at noon. And then immediately after Mass, we are going to process over to the construction site for a small ceremony, or I should say short. I'm hoping it's not going to be small. I'm hoping there's lots of people celebrating with us for this momentous occasion.
Yeah, great. Just mark that down in your calendar. We'll mention it again. But April 21st, starting with adoration at 11, Mass at noon, and the
ceremony following.
Ceremony to follow that.
And one thing to mention about all of this is phase one. So phase one is the exterior of the building, you know, the foundation and all of that fun stuff, because we have the money raised and pledged to do that piece. But there's still more work to be done. We still have phase two to raise money for, which is just about $1 million. And then once we have that raised, that will completely finish this home for intercessory prayer. But we started with phase one because, you know, it's springtime, dirt needs to be moved.
Yeah.
And if we're going to, you know, get this project moving and continue, we had to start breaking ground now. So it's super exciting, but there is still more money to be raised. And so if you want to help with that, you can give us a call at 605-988-3788 and ask for Katie Fritz, or you can go to the sisters' website that I mentioned before, perpetualadorationsisters.org, and you can actually make a donation there as well.
Yeah, and I know, Katie, this is a labor of love for a lot of people, and yet more people are needed.
Yes, more people are needed. It's been a very quiet campaign in ways. The best way for people to understand what we're trying to do is by meeting the sisters and experiencing the sisters.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard concept to understand that we're building a monastery dedicated to prayer. And so unless you truly get it, you really don't get it. You need to meet them. And once you meet those women, you realize how important it is that they are here and how special they are to this diocese and how fortunate we are in this diocese to have them here. And so I encourage you to give me a call and to set up a tour of their current monastery. And also soon we'll be able to show or give tours of the shell of the new monastery. But I encourage you to call and or go online and learn more about them.
You know, it's a great point, Katie, that you make. And I really echo what you're saying to encourage people to get to know them. I remember when the Carmelites moved to the Diocese of Sioux Falls in the late 90s, and their new facility was open before they did the formal enclosure of it. And so I got a chance, along with a lot of other people, to go over there and to see it. And it is something that really I remember to this day, because it's Spartan, the way those Carmelites lived. You know, that image of how they're going to live their life. Now, after they enclose it, nobody gets in, right?
Right.
And I think that'll be similar here. So get to know these women while you have the chance, because it's meaningful.
So the Perpetual Adoration Sisters are a little different than the Carmelites.
Right.
The Carmelites are completely cloistered.
Right.
Where these sisters, yes, their living quarters and where they do their work is completely cloistered, but you'll be able to be with them in the chapel, and they will also have a gift shop because they make hosts for parishes in our diocese. They make vestments and altar cloths and things like that. So there will be some unique opportunities for people to be with them and learn more about them. So they're not completely cloistered.
Yeah, and that's a great point. But it is their universe.
I mean, this building whole world.
Is their world.
They are going to live all the days of their lives in this building. They even have an infirmary.
Yeah.
So when they get sick and they get elderly, that they are taken care of. So this is their whole world.
Yeah. It's really something. So still a chance to be a part of it.
Yes. And
we really encourage people to do that. Appreciate you mentioning the website, Brian, because you can learn an awful lot about them. There's actually some videos on there as well.
Yeah, there's video testimonials on there from the people who the sisters have touched in a very, very personal way. You'll also be able to hear from Bishop Swain there, and you hear from the sisters themselves and these people that they've touched. And as we go through the construction process, we will be adding photos of the process throughout there. So everything that has to do with the sisters, if you want to know more, you want to keep up with construction, you want to know what's happening, PerpetualAdorationSisters.org is where you need to go.
Or even to the foundation's web Facebook page.
Yep.
Yesterday you had a very cool little time lapse up of the diggers doing their work. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, so you can go to the foundation website also, which is ccfesd.org, or you can go to our Facebook page, Twitter account, or Instagram and see all the fun stuff that's happening with the sisters and a lot of other things.
So whatever way you like to communicate, you can find out about what's going on.
We want to make it available where you are.
All right. Well, the monastery work is among the things going on at the Catholic Community Foundation. I wanted to talk just a little bit about a couple of others. One in particular, and that is the upcoming board meeting, because I'm always struck by this gathering of people from all across eastern South Dakota, from a lot of different parishes across the diocese, who all come together to really give of their time to consider issues that are going on in the diocese. It's a beautiful thing, and it's coming up at the end of the month.
End of April. We're going to be in Aberdeen, South Dakota, for a day and a half of meetings and planning and community building. And it's a great time for all these different people from across our diocese to hear the same message, to learn about what the foundation is doing, and that we are trying to raise funds to continue all the different ministries within our Catholic Church in the diocese.
Yeah, and what's really cool about it is I think people are finally starting to understand that the Catholic Foundation is really for everybody Eastern South Dakota, the parishes, the schools, the cemeteries, all the ministries. It's for everyone.
Yeah, it's for everyone. And in the last year, we've also had a couple of exciting announcements that we have opened community offices in Aberdeen and in Watertown. And it's been
at the request of those communities,
which
I think is really cool.
Of community leaders, at the request of the local priests, because I think they realize that we need to be able to fund ministries, and we need to fund schools, and we need to fund all the things you talked about. And what better way is it than to have somebody in their local community, their local area, that people know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how, you know, in foundation work, you know, most of the stuff happens when you see somebody at a ball game, or you see somebody in the grocery store, or you run into them at Mass.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're not in that community specifically, it's hard to make those connections, and it's hard to, you know, be present. And so, you know, we've started with Watertown and Aberdeen, and Marnie's in Watertown, Dave is in Aberdeen, doing a great job. And if you're in any of those communities or areas, you know, please give us a call, because Marnie and Dave would love to talk to you about, you know, the ways that we can help you, you know, steward your gifts.
Yeah, it's a really cool thing. And I know having those meetings in the communities is also a way for people to become more knowledgeable about the work of the foundation. I presume at least that's part of the goal.
Oh, yes. And definitely part of the goal, to spread the good news of the foundation and what we do. And
And we have great community members from those communities. Yes. I know both so from grateful. Aberdeen, and I know, like, you did this last year in Watertown.
Yep. So. And it's kind of like a tagline of the foundation says, share the faith, secure the future. And that's what we're really trying to do, is share our Catholic faith and secure the future for, you know, those Catholics, our children, who are going to come behind us, that are going to need ministry in parishes and schools and all of the same things.
And one of the things I know I've talked about lots of times when we've done these interviews with folks from the foundation is sometimes there's a perception that it's only people who have a lot of means that can find value in what's going on at the foundation. It really doesn't matter what kind of level of means you have. Mm-hmm. There's a way that you can be helped through the work of the foundation.
Right. I mean, it doesn't, you don't have to have $1 million. You just need to be thoughtful and have a plan. I was just at a conference earlier this week in Kansas City, and, you know, none of us are, flush with cash. Anyhow, we're raising four kids and putting them through school. But
absolutely,
all of us though we can make a plan, and we have goals and aspirations to give back, hopefully. And we're here to help you put that together, be it to set up an endowment or to add some ministry in your will. There's different ways that you can be giving that you probably haven't even thought of.
Yeah, and don't think it's just about money either, because, you know, Jesus teaches us that it's time, talent, and treasure. And whether you have time, whether you have talent, or you have treasure, they're all three important.
Right.
And we, as the foundation, as the diocese, need all three. So even if you don't, you know, have the ability to do the planning that Katie's talking about, you still have time. Everybody has time, and everybody has talent. Yep. And they're just as valuable in the work that we're doing.
I know one of the things, and as we run out of time this morning, one of the things we always talk about is that think about the things you're passionate about, things that mean something to you that you want to help in the future. And I'm almost going to guarantee you the foundation can help you do that.
You are absolutely correct.
Yes, thanks, Brian
Jerry. Brian Cooper and Katie Fritz, thanks for being with us this morning. Again, check out the website, the monastery groundbreaking on April 21st. You can learn all about it there.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you. Well, Gene, as we wrap up today, it is Holy Week.
It is already. Lent is now concluding, and we're into Holy Week, so people should check their parish bulletin, check their parish websites for the list of services and opportunities to celebrate Holy Week leading up to Easter.
Great opportunities this week. Beautiful liturgies. I hope everyone takes advantage of that. That's our time for Catholic Views today. We'll be back next Sunday.